destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We'll do there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Huh? Oh my God! He's coming at you!
All right. When it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, guys? That's right. As you just heard, my name is James Gutman, and you are tuned in to the Friday, February 24th, 2006 edition of JG's Radio Free Insanity right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And we have a hell of a show for you guys this week. In fact, our special guest in part two is going to be the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and his name is... That's right, Christian Cage, coming to Radio Free Insanity. Very excited to have him on. Going to be cool. And Christian, as a lot of you guys know, left WWE of his own free will and accord to go to TNA and challenge for the world title. And as luck would have it, he won the World's Heavyweight Championship. Somebody I've wanted to have on the show for a while. Really glad we're having him on at the time we're having him. Just because now, after winning the belt, it's almost vindication in so many ways. And we had Rhino on a few weeks ago, and we talked a little bit about vindication, about being in WWE, or any company that doesn't really showcase you as highly as you think you deserve to. Going to another company, being treated as a big deal on the way in, and be given the chance to run with the ball somewhat. So, Christian Cage getting a chance to run with the ball after so many false starts in WWE. We're going to have him on. Of course, I mean, he's got a busy week, so he's going to give us about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. So we'll be able to get a lot of questions out there, talk to him, and see what he has to say. But right now you're in part one. So that means that you're here to hear some part one stuff. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on the phone line a guy that has been doing so much on our website and has been keeping us so updated on so many things, and I'm not going to belabor the point. We might as well just bring him right on. All right, folks, so you want to know what he sounds like? You want to hear from the man himself. Guys, join me in welcoming to the show WorldWrestlingInsanity.com columnist Zah, what's up, bro?
How you doing, JG?
That's good, man. Good to have you on the show, finally.
Finally, appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem, man, and you picked a good week to be on. We got a lot crazy shit going on in the wrestling business as we're heading into WrestleMania. Are you excited?
No.
Okay.
But there's absolutely no reason. The only thing that makes me even remotely excited about WrestleMania at this point is the news that we're going to talk about a little bit from SmackDown and the announcement of the Money in the Bank by Carlito on Monday. Other than that, it's who cares at this point?
But your boy is taking on Cena.
that's been blown up out of proportion on the message boards.
Well,
it really has.
Well, because of you, though, I think every time I picture Hunter, I just hear in my head, these pretzels are making me thirsty, and I picture him saying it.
Well, this is the deal with Hunter, and I kind of want to set the record straight right now. Yes, I am a fan. I've been a fan since the late 90s, and I can go through a big story about why I'm a fan. But the thing is that I believe that I can see both sides of the situation. I know that Hunter is taking advantage of his power. Yes, I don't think that can be disputed. But the guy, it's not like, how should I put this? He doesn't completely suck.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you. I think a lot of people, they lose sight of that fact. It's not all one or the other, I think, with anybody. You know,
they're blinded by hatred.
Oh, yeah.
And I can understand hating the guy. I mean, the guy has been on top, and whether it's deserved or not, he's been on top for, 6-7 years now. And yes, it is time to move on, but I mean, right now, WWE, either by hook or by crook, has not put another heel in that kind of position where they can headline an event like WrestleMania other than Hunter.
Ah, but see, therein my problem lies. I don't know about some of the readers, but that's always been my issue with Triple H. It's not that, I mean, they can't pull him out now, and they can't kind of pull him out of the main event picture. Number one, that wouldn't be smart. Number two, I mean, he's the top guy they have in that spot. My issue isn't that he's there. My issue isn't that he's getting pushed. My issue is exactly what you just said. WWE hasn't put anybody else in a position to take his spot, which I think is the basic argument of it all, is that that's the idea. You know what I mean? And if it was anybody else, everyone says he's married to Stephanie, but I think the fact that he's married to Stephanie doesn't make him a top star. I think the fact that he's married to Stephanie has kept him solidified in that top spot, no matter what the audience may think, either way, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, and I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I mean, I thought, and I still think to this day, that Edge should be headlining at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been just such a great, new, different, exciting main event, and even make the sub-main event, make the, you know, the angle match main. But, I mean, I thought Cena versus Edge with some kind of big stiff at WrestleMania, because Edge was hot. He still is hot. Right now, he's money. He is at the peak of his game, no pun intended. But I think Edge is the next super heel in WWE. I don't think anyone else even comes close at this point.
Well, here's what really got me, and this is what amazes me about WWE. We're sitting here now. We're heading into WrestleMania. Everyone's talking about how lackluster the card is. But it would have made so much more sense had Rob Van Dam, who was red hot after last year's ECW show. And I mean, I'm a fan of RVD's work, but I know he's got limitations. He's been gone. They're going to reintroduce him at the Royal Rumble. They do. He comes in with a whimper. I mean, to the point where it's like, hey, how are you? What's up, Rob? Nice to see you. Had they actually put something behind him, you know, prior to his return, because when a guy comes back, that's usually the big moment for them to kind of get the heat or get the crowd behind him, not heat in his case, but the crowd behind him. Van Dam, Edge, WrestleMania, maybe a ladder match. It didn't have to close out the show, but that could have been something to watch for.
Something like a ladder match helps Rob Van Dam because it hides his weaknesses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like that. This is what really bothered me about his return, is that after the Royal Rumble, where he ended up in the top four, the final four, which was great, you know, I got no problem with that, the next night at Raw, who does he face?
Yeah, Snitsky.
Snitsky.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to, you know, showcase the talent and make Rob Van Dam make an instant splash on Monday Night Raw by putting him in with Snitsky?
Yeah.
That just boggled my mind, and I knew from that point on that nothing was going to change.
Oh, yeah.
The people were going to cheer, and he was still going to be under that glass ceiling. Nothing is going to change with Rob Van Dam.
Well, you don't have to look any further than Monday's promo. I mean, it's the kind of thing where I'm banging my head into the wall, because we've been saying for years, WWE's been saying, well, Rob doesn't have emotion in his speeches. And fans agree, you know, Rob can't do promos like that. He should be doing promos as a stoner. Not even as a stoner, but maybe as a laid-back guy. You know, hey, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that. Instead, they put him on Monday. And I said in the Raw report, it was like a sixth grader reading out loud in class. Like, he was, I'm going to wrestle. And it's like, oh, dude, I'm going to pass out. I'm so tired. Like, to me, it just seems like things are being done that can't be an accident, just because they have the same mistakes that they've been making for years.
Yeah, I guarantee you, if he was wrestling for a spot at an ECW card, he'd be really upset, and he'd be like, oh, I'm going to kick Triple H's ass!
Yep.
But, you know, you can tell real emotion from acting emotion.
Well, that's the thing. It was the ECW show that he did last year. He did that promo, and it was that whole work-shoot promo. And on one hand, it wasn't really a shoot, because you don't do shoots if you're working for the company. So obviously the things that he said were scripted. But he delivered it in a way that people thought it was a shoot, meaning that he had real emotion in it, that it came off not that he was reading lines. And he hasn't done it again since. It's almost like every time he's on WWE programming, they give him things that just doesn't make any sense. He might as well be speaking Spanish. Do you know what I mean? Because it's so foreign to come out of his mouth.
And that's what separates, you know, the ones who end up getting pushes from the ones who don't. Matt Hardy, his big-time return completely stalled the moment they gave a microphone to him.
Uh-huh.
Someone like Edge is skyrocketing, not because he's, like, brilliant in the ring, it's because of his on-air persona, his ability to cut a good promo. Carlito is getting to be the same way. You're seeing intensity in his promos. He's going to get pushed above Masters going down the road. I mean, this is just... It's always been about entertainment over substance in the ring. If you have a combination of both, that's great, but it's not required. It's not a necessity. No one's ever going to say that someone like Stone Cold or Rock were brilliant in the ring. They could tell stories, right? They had the basics. They could tell a story from A to Z, but they weren't like a Kurt Angle in the ring, right? But what they had is that they had personalities that blew everybody else out of the water. That's what, you know, WWE has been looking for ever since. Whether it's the right or wrong decision, you know, we can all complain about it all day long, but that's why someone like Edge and Carlito are going to get the pushes, and someone like Rob Van Dam is not. It's because he looks like a deer in the headlights when he gets in front of a camera.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the funny thing, though, because, I mean, coming up and growing up watching wrestling, some of my favorite guys, I don't think I heard speak more than four words. I mean, Bobby Eaton, Greg Valentine for a good amount of his WWE time, guys like... I mean, the list goes on and on as far as people who let managers speak for them all the time. And to me, it's always boggled the mind that they have all this talent there. And they have the ability, somebody that the fans want to get behind. They want to throw money at Rob Van Dam. And if for no other reason than that, no one ever expected to ever see him outside of ECW. That was the thing. You know, they wanted him in WWE, and now he's there. So instead of hiring a mouthpiece or somebody, or even Bill Alfonso, or somebody in that kind of vein to speak for him, they throw this money at juniors and at C-level announcers and divas just to do their thing, and they're leaving money on the table with a guy like Van Dam or somebody else who might be able to get the crowd up and down in the ring, but not on the mic.
It's amazing to me how the manager has gone by the wayside in WWE, and the managerial role. I mean, when you have someone like a Rob Van Dam, who is so spectacular in the ring when he wants to be, because he's not doing it right now, but when he wants to be, he can be fantastic in the ring. But if they can't speak, then by all means, put a manager. I mean, God, you remember back in the 80s, you had Jimmy Hart, you had Bobby Heenan, you had Slick, you had all these characters who brought on so much heat on these heels by being the mouthpieces and interfering and doing those things back in the 80s. You don't have that anymore. And so you got these guys who, you know, can perform, but they can't say anything, and they get pushed aside. I mean, I'm looking at people like Jim Mitchell in TNA for a bit. Jim Mitchell is fantastic.
Yeah.
I you know, you look at ROH and Prince Nana and the Embassy. I love Prince Nana. I think he's fantastic because Jimmy Rave can't cut a promo. You know, and Alex Shelley really isn't that great at calling a promo at this point anyways. So you got Prince Nana on there. You know what I'm saying? Ah, you piece of crap, you. And I love that stuff. I love a manager that can make me laugh and make me hate people at the same time. Yeah. And that's just, I think that's a big thing that could be used for a lot of wrestlers in WWE, but for whatever reason, like you said, you know, Super Porky's taking all that money instead, so.
Well, I mean, the irony of the whole thing, and WWE likes to say, you know, they have to cut good promos, they have to cut good promos. As great as WrestleMania 3 was, how good would it have been if there was no Bobby Heenan involved in the main event, and the pre-match promos were, I'm on the chalk, and every speech that Andre gave prior to fighting Hogan consisted of, I'm on the chalk, and that was the end of it, and Bobby Heenan would come in and talk for the next 10 minutes. Nowadays, you know, what would they do? They would just send Andre out there and be like, I don't know, he's just not connecting because, you know, he doesn't speak right.
It's frustrating. It's one of the many, many things that's frustrating me these days. It makes me shake my head, you know, little pimping out the column a little bit.
Very nice.
Me shake my head about the wrestling industry and WWE especially. That managerial role and tag team wrestling, or the lack thereof, on Raw as opposed to SmackDown.
Oh, yeah. Tag team wrestling in WWE is gone out the window.
Well, who's the tag team champions on Raw?
No, it's that guy who was trying to get into the main event of WrestleMania this week, wasn't it? Wasn't that one?
Yeah, and some guy who plays with fire. I mean, no one knows.
Yeah.
No one has any idea. And the sad part is that there's nobody right now that's a team that could beat them for the title. So it's all a moot point anyway.
Well, I mean, it's like taking Lance Cade, who's kind of this underused jobber on Heat, and Trevor Murdoch, who's not really doing anything, giving them a big push, bringing them in under this big, all these vignettes and all these videos, bringing them back, and then here we are, 5 months later, and Trevor Murdoch is now not doing anything, and Lance Cade is the jobber on Heat. It just makes no sense that they don't deal with what they have, and the actual effort that they've already put into these characters. I mean, it's not like there's anything more that they have to do. They've already built them up. Even if you don't put them over everybody, they're a tag team. Make them a tag team. What's the point of pulling them apart already?
Once they won the belt, they didn't win a single match until they lost the belt.
Yeah.
How sad is that?
Pathetic, dude.
You know, like it was a by count out or a non-title match. They didn't win a single match on television until they got beat for those titles. And then, you know, as much as I love Eminem over on SmackDown, you know, they're getting beat by Kurt Angle in a handicap match. Well, you know, I understand wanting to make your champion look strong, but why at the expense of your tag team champion?
Well, they did that with Batista last year, too.
Exactly, when he shut the pole up the ass.
Yep, yep.
You know, of what, the Resistance guys?
Mm-hmm.
It's just sad. I mean, make them beat a tag team. Make them beat a good tag team. I don't really have a problem with that. But not your champions. Not the guys who are supposed to be the best team in the entire world. That makes no sense to me.
Well, I think Eminem, they've done a great job in making Eminem boring. And this was a team that everybody was looking forward to seeing coming in after their OVW days. And they showed up, and ever since then, they've been feuding with the, you know, AARP. I mean, it's them against Animal and Heidenreich and Matt Hardy. It's like, what are you doing, guys? You know, I mean, just...
Matt Hardy and Tatanka.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. I mean, well, I remember when Tatanka went out and said on the internet about maybe 6 months ago, after making, like, a little guest appearance, he goes, oh, yeah, I got signed to a WWE contract, and I just got to lose some weight and come back in the ring. Everyone was like, ah, you're so full of shit. And then he dropped weight, and they fucking brought him back.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Legends contract. They brought him back.
Oh, yeah.
The last time he was in the ring in WWE, 10 years ago.
See, that's
there's so much talent out there, and they're bringing back to Tonka?
Yeah. Not even like the Jim Duggan way. I mean, I thought Jim Duggan was used correctly, but, I mean, Tatanka's a full-fledged member of the roster, like Laurinaitis' brother.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, it's unbelievable. And I've said this in my SmackDown reviews over and over. You've got so much potential in the tag team division right now on SmackDown. You get rid of Gemini, because the Gemini, they're too big for everybody, and they fucking ring. You got Eminem, you got the Mexicals, you got London and Kendrick. You've got guys who can put on, if they had enough time together, right, you know, because you got to get that chemistry together, to put on some spectacular tag team matches and some really great feuds if given the opportunity. But, they throw them on for one match and that's it. And they move on to Matt Hardy and Tatanka. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes I really wonder if WWE is purposely trying to piss people off. How are they going to make money? And that's the other thing, too. From a business perspective, other than maybe, you know, selling some Native American merchandise, where are they going to get money from Tatanka?
Oh.
Where are they going to get money teaming Tatanka with Matt Hardy?
They don't get money from anywhere anymore. I mean, it kind of seems like a lot of the things that are done now are just done to entertain themselves. I mean, there's so many things that happen on that show that it's like they purposely throw the money-making ability out the window right off the bat.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so many things that, you know, and I'm one of those guys who likes to give gimmicks a chance before they're shot down. Like, you can check the post. I was a fan of the Spirit Squad before, you know, a lot of people gave them a chance. I'm still a fan, especially after seeing some of the stuff they did this past week on Monday. You know, I'm a fan of the Boogeyman. I know he can't wrestle a lick, but I've been a fan before people start jumping on board. So I like to give gimmicks a chance, but there's certain times when you look at some of the decisions that WWE makes, and you sit back and you say, that just has no chance whatsoever. Trevor Murdoch going on WWE.com talking about, you know, Brokeback Mountain is not going to get him over as a performer. It's not going to make WWE money. You know, Tatanka teaming with Matt Hardy is not going to do Hardy any good. And it's, you know, the only one that's ever helps is Tatanka, because he's on TV again.
Yeah, exactly. It's his first match.
So, I mean, sometimes, as much as I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, sometimes you got to sit back and say, you're just completely just idiots.
Well, I think Matt Hardy's kind of funny in a way, because this is a guy that was doing tag teams for years and years and years, and, you know, finally he's supposed to break out on his own and come to WWE, and what do they have left for him now? He's doing tag teams with Tatanka. I mean, WWE is overcrowded with a lot of people that they either have no interest in pushing, or don't know how to push, or just don't want to push. And they end up on WWE.com, and they end up, you know, doing dark matches for Raw shows. It just doesn't make any sense to me, the amount of money that gets sunk into a lot of these guys that they have no, you know, no direction for, and no reason to even have on the payroll.
No, unless you're in one of the top two or three, storylines, you're not going to get it either. So, I don't understand, the whole creative process for WWE. I mean, at this point in time, anyways, just look at what things were like, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Everybody had a chance to do something. Everyone was getting airtime, and that was when you had one roster. So, I get frustrated just thinking about it. Let's move on.
Well, I'm saying, the thing is, to me, exactly, I think the thing is that really gets me, and it's the kind of thing that becomes transparent, and it's what bothers me a lot about the way that the company is run creatively. Back, and you said 10 years ago, when they were competing with WCW, and WWE was kind of in that tight spot where they had to beat the competition, they had to do the best they can, they went out and they put on the best shows, and we said before, they had everybody from the top of the card to the bottom had a storyline. Now it's almost like, and we say they have no competition, and they have TNA, but I mean, TNA still is months away from really being a strong challenge to the point where WWE has to sweat bullets. It almost seems like, in lieu of making money, it's more of, well, I don't like that person personally, or they don't get along well in the office. It's going to be worth more to me to punish them by not giving them a spot than to see if I can possibly make money. It's the Goldberg effect. You know what I mean? It's a matter of, well, we have him. He can make money, but he's a dick. So let's screw him, and we'll have fun with it for a while, and we'll convince the fans that maybe we'll do something with him. Maybe we'll sell a few T-shirts out of it. It's right now the wrestling landscape has kind of lended itself it's Vince's toy right now, and there's really nothing anybody can do about it until TNA starts breaking pay-per-view records, you know?
Here's a perfect example of what you just said. It's been reported online, and it's been widely noted that Paul Burchill is supposed to be seen as the next British Bulldog. They see that the UK is such a great market for them. They can make a lot of money when they go over there. They get great ratings. They need somebody, and they obviously don't think William Regal is it. So they're saying Paul Burchill is going to be the next megastar for the UK, just like British Bulldog was. Let's make him a pirate.
Yeah, I know.
And then the dead silence, right?
Exactly.
Make him a pirate. And not only that, they're saying that he's supposed to be a legit pirate. That's why he's not going, arg, me mateys. That's why he's just walking around saying, hello, because he's supposed to be legitimately a pirate. And this is the wonderful marketing idea to push Paul Burchill as the next superstar for the UK.
Yeah, they don't get it. They live in a bubble, man. They live in this bubble where... And that's the thing, like anybody who's been a part of a business or an industry for too long realizes that after a while you tend to not be able to put yourself into your audience's shoes. But, I mean, really, whether it's Steph or whoever the hell it is that thinks of things like this, it just makes you wonder what kind of view they get when they close their eyes and they think of wrestling fans.
Well, you wonder who's really coming up with these ideas and why, and who's approving them. Like, we know that Vince is approving the ideas, but why? Why are these Hollywood writers who have zero experience in professional wrestling, why are these writers saying, hey, let's make this guy a pirate, or hey, I don't know, there's so much crap. Let's team up Tatanka with Matt Hardy, for example, and let's throw it at Vince and see what he says. And Vince is saying, yes, let's get some juniors and make them, bop around the ring, and people will love that. Sure, why not? Like, why is he saying yes? I don't...
There's nothing to worry about, man. When you have no one to really worry about, I mean, wrestling is it's a part of our culture, and it's not going to go anywhere, you know? So there's always going to be a wrestling promotion. And right now, Vince is that, and he's not going anywhere because there's really no one to take the reins. So in the meantime, it's like I said to, when we had Spike Dudley on, we had said they throw shit against the wall to see what sticks, and unfortunately now they're left surrounded in a room full of shit because they're just throwing everything against the wall, and everything's just falling down on their face. And with them going down creatively, people say, oh, money and this and that and the DVD sales, but creatively, which is the most important part of the show, because if you take a decline creatively on screen, over time that catches up to you. That catches up to DVD sales, and that catches up to everything else, because there's going to be another company working the opposite way, which is what TNA is doing, because TNA has problems, definite problems, but TNA is still running things at least a little bit better than they were a few months ago. It almost seems like they're on an upswing, just as WWE is really getting into a downswing. And it's just, on so many levels, you have to wonder, do they worry, or what the hell, what goes through somebody's mind when they're putting on shows like this?
Well, this is the thing. WWE has all the potential in the world. They've got a lot of fantastic talent. But they just, like you said, after throwing so many ideas against the wall, they have no idea what to do with them anymore.
Yeah.
TNA, on the flip side, isn't right now concerned as much about characters as they are about putting on a great product. And that they're hoping if they can hook enough people on their great product, then they can start putting storylines and characters together.
Yeah.
And I think right now TNA, for the most part, has been doing a really good job of that. They're starting to bring characters to life. I don't know why Austin Aries dresses the way he does now, but he's now a character. Alex Shelley has got the video camera and the hair.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these guys now. Samoa Joe is now doing promos, and he's just as intense on a promo as he was before. So, TNA is starting to dive into, the storylines. They realize that, you can have the greatest in-ring product in the world, but what brings people to the dance, what brings viewers to the TV screens, is going to be the storyline.
Exactly.
And the character development. And so once they can get and combine the two together, they're going to be something to look out for sure.
Well, it's all about promotion, and I think that's something that TNA is finally learning now. You can go to any independent show in the country and see a good wrestling match. Maybe not any independent, you know what I mean? But
for sure.
If you're a good wrestler, you could wrestle well anywhere you are. The only reason to go to a promotion is so that promotion can promote you. So if you have a wrestling promotion like TNA, like they had a year or two ago, where every match was great, but you didn't know who the hell was wrestling, you didn't know who was in the X division, that's not a good promotion. That's just a good, on-air entertaining product. You know what I mean? So TNA's job was always to make them into characters, and it's finally now, and I've noticed, it's changed ever since they started doing these monthly pay-per-views finally and got off of Fox Sports and all that stuff.
Yep.
Really, they're starting to realize what they're supposed to be doing and working with it, and it's almost like, in a way, they've been waiting for this moment. They've been waiting for the chance to be able to get on Spike TV and show what they can do. Whether or not they'll be able to continue it, on this upswing, and they're not going to hit a wall, that's anybody's guess. But as of now, it seems like they're finally starting to correct a lot of the problems that fans have been voicing about them.
Yeah, and it only took them $20 million to figure that out.
Exactly, my friend, exactly.
I mean, they could have done, it's so, so hard to fathom they were doing weekly pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Looking back now, you're wondering how they even stood, a chance to begin with.
And those were painful, man. It wasn't even like, I would rather pay for the shows that they're putting on Spike TV now than the shows that they were charging for 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Some Wednesdays were good. I still remember that Raven Jarrett TNA show, which was like the big one that they had. And that was
I remember that too.
But other than that, there were some shows where I just watched them. There was the Armstrong brothers fighting with each other and the Johnsons. It's like, oh, come on, guys.
The midgets in the garbage can.
Oh, a midget. A jerk off. Yep. The whole nine with them. But no, it's good to see somebody finally coming up a little bit. WWE, they're definitely on WWE's radar. They know that they're there. And we'll see. If things continue at the pace they're going, for no other reason, the wrestling fans are going to win because we're going to have some genuine competition to a certain extent.
And I absolutely hope that that's what happens. The only thing that I'm concerned with, and I'm glad it kind of stopped, is that TNA for a bit was starting to become WWE light.
Uh-huh.
They were bringing in characters and bringing in people that WWE had let go. And I'm glad that they kind of put a stop to that. I think Christian actually was the one who made that kind of stop, because he came over on his own.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he did, because right now TNA, and I've said this over and over, is the best way to break out is to be different and be unique and be original. They couldn't do that with Jeff Jarrett as their champion.
Mm.
And as much as I enjoy Jeff, and I do, I enjoy Jeff Jarrett as a heel, as an upper mid-card heel, or even a main event heel. I enjoy Jarrett's work, especially the last 2 months.
Yeah.
He's been on fire. He's been great on the mic. He's been very good in the ring. He's been doing more than just pulling his own end of the bargain. But But the thing is that he's been champion for the majority of TNA's run, and they have not seen dramatic increase in anything across the board. So he needed to step down as champion. They've got someone new. Going forward, I think everybody and their dog believes Samoa Joe is going to be the next champion down the road. Monty Brown can be a good champion down the road. Guys who are different, who are built up from within, and are seen as strictly TNA talent. And I think that's really going to help separate them from, you know, from WWE.
Oh, exactly. Well, I think Jarrett's problem, you brought up since he's been champion so long, the main problem that I find with Jarrett, and I've always had this problem, is a lack of direction on his part, a lack of focus. It always seemed like Jeff is feuding with at least three people. And that's, I don't know if to him it seems like that's good, and it's almost like, you know, we all say, oh, so-and-so is running the show so they can do whatever they want, and in that position you would kind of think that maybe Jeff is thinking to himself, well, you know, if I'm the top guy on the show, I should have lots of opponents, but it almost has a reverse effect, because when you have a guy in his position feuding with so many people, they don't really have one nemesis, and I mean, now it's finally getting to be Christian a little bit, but even before this, it was, you know, well, it's kind of Christian and Sting and Monty Brown, and then before that it was, well, you know, it's kind of Raven, a little Rhino. It's like Jeff just needed, and still does now, if they really want to make a focus on finally using him in a way that they can get the most out of him, as opposed to just letting him run amok and just do his thing on the show. Jeff needs one person to say, this is the guy that Jeff Jarrett is feuding with. Everybody else can have issues and whatever, blah, blah, but this is Jarrett's guy. And hopefully now, even now, Christian's heading in, he's fighting Monty Brown at the next show, so that kind of takes that off the table a little bit. Jeff Jarrett has never had a nemesis, you know, the most
not really.
Raven, yeah, and it's
that's,
always...
That's I'm hoping this Sting story pans out. I mean, you know, he's the whole reason he brought him in was the feud with Jeff Jarrett, really.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
But even so, I mean, that's the problem, is that you bring him in to feud with Jarrett, and technically, if you're going to be doing a storyline like that, and you can look at some of the big ones from the past, when somebody comes in to feud with somebody, the person they're feuding with is either only feuding with one guy, or not doing anything, and just waiting for that guy to kind of get his shit together so they can start their little program with each other. The problem with Jeff is that, you know, Jeff is always busy doing something. It's Jackie Gaeta, it's Christian Cage, it's and you know, and then at the end of the day, we still have Sting that we're waiting on. And it's like, Jeff needs to just cool out for a bit, you know, sit back, relax, and just let things kind of take its course so that when he does get his next opponent, it seems like an epic showdown. I mean, how impressive would some of the best feuds in history, Randy Savage or Ricky Steamboat, which I always bring up as one of my favorite feuds in history.
Absolutely.
How much fun would that be if Steamboat was feuding with, you know, Bob Orton and Butch Reed at the same time? It wouldn't have been as effective.
I don't know, I'd be pretty down with the Butch Reed feud, to tell you the truth, but that's just me. But no, I absolutely hear what you're saying. I think if you look at some of the biggest feuds in history of professional wrestling, they've always been one-on-one. They haven't been, you know, all the focus has been on the two people who are actually in the feud together.
Mm-hmm.
So I absolutely agree. I think Jeff Jarrett and Sting as a program can be money for TNA. They've already proven that Sting can bring in viewers, can bring in buys for not a lot of buys, but he brought in a few buys for the pay-per-view, and they're doing the whole slow burn, bringing him back up. And as long as he concentrates on Sting, which I think this Saturday is what they're going to do, with the whole Alex Shelley video tape segment, I think they can build up to a pretty good match and get some pop for that.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, I've said it before. I'm a personal fan of Sting. I also think Sting is a good name to bring in just because, you know, he's the guy that the McMahon didn't get. You know, he's the guy that never went to WWE. He's the guy who, you know, I mean, you can say, oh, well, it's like WCW, and it is, but it's not Diamond Dallas Page. It's not a guy who WWE pulled in and then made into some dork, and it's not, you know, Rick Steiner or somebody like that. I mean, this is a guy, he's a top-level guy for WCW, never got watered down by WWE, and, yeah, it's different, you know. It's been a few years since he's really been on top, and he's not in the position to wrestle every week. So they seem to be using him fairly well, and I like the addition of Alex Shelley into it. I think that they got their head together finally as far as how to use a lot of these older names.
Yeah, I agree. I wish that Sting was a little bit younger, but obviously it's not hurting the numbers to bring him in at the amount of money that they're bringing him in at. So, from what I understand with the numbers, TNA is well on their way to making the money back from just the first pay-per-view alone.
Dude, we all wish we were a little bit younger.
What's that?
I said we all wish we were a little bit younger, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, he's what, 48?
I don't know. I'm not gonna say either way, just because there's a habit of lights going out and bats popping up strangely in jackets. Let me ask you about this. Let's talk a little bit real quick before we finish up here about the announcement of SmackDown that we're going to be heading into WrestleMania. And for another year, we're going to be getting a triple threat main event for the world title. For anybody who hasn't seen SmackDown yet and you're listening to this before the show, turn the volume down for a second. And if you don't complain. Rey Mysterio, Randy Orton, Kurt Angle, all heading into Mania, doing the triple threat match for the world title, announced at the SmackDown tapings. How do you feel about it?
Like I said, you know, I'll open when we start talking, that's one of the two reasons right now that got me interested in WrestleMania. They've built it up to the point where they had to put Mysterio in the three-way. They were building up and milking Eddie Guerrero's death, mate, rest in peace. They were milking his death for all it was worth, and it was really, really getting sad and pathetic. And then he won the Royal Rumble, and people were like, wow, you know, what's going on? And as soon as he won the Rumble, it was immediately reported that he wasn't going to Mania because Orton was going to get the title shot.
Yeah.
And people were like, are you kidding me? And then Orton was milking it, and he was milking it to try to set up the storyline of Rey putting his, you know, the title shot on the line. But I think WWE got so much flack, both external and internal, that they had no choice. They had to put Mysterio in because, one, it's the better story. Two, they're going to get money out of it. I mean, I think they're going to get more buys out of this three-way than they would from just Orton and Angle.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, there was no storyline connection between Orton and Angle anyway. It's the same thing that they're doing with Cena and Hunter. There's no build-up. There's no storyline. You've got a month to set up a main event. But now, I mean, they've already dropped hints. Angle has already said, I would love to face you at WrestleMania. It's been set in motion. You know, the underpinnings, the underling of Angle saying, you know, it'd be an honor to wrestle you. But now we get Orton in the mix. I think it's going to be a really heated match. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I think at the end of the day, I've been searching ever since this whole thing happened for reasons. For the Eddie Guerrero inclusion. I mean, it's a thing, and the book is coming out in the whole nine yards with our feelings on WWE. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I hesitate to think that these are just really heartless people that don't care. And I've been searching for reasons for this in my head, and I think it comes down to WWE and the people that work there being so surrounded by the Eddie Guerrero situation after it happened, because obviously it was a real thing and it was something that really happened. I think as the company is starting to change, and as Vince is spending more and more time in the soap opera kind of world, you know, and Stephanie, in many ways, grew up in the bubble. Same thing with Shane. I mean, they're two kids that grew up in the wrestling industry their whole lives, and have kind of been taught that everything goes on air. You know what I mean? They've watched their parents voice their problems, their marital problems, on air as part of storylines, to the point where it confuses newspapers, you know? And I think that with this situation, if I'm looking for any good out of it, I think it was a misguided effort on their part, thinking that everything that affects WWE, even if it's outside the realm of the storyline, is supposed to be used. And I hope, you know, especially as we've started to not make it as harsh as it was before. I mean, they're still bringing up Eddie, and they're still using his name, but it's not as harsh as it was. I think that this situation and the backlash that you just spoke about hopefully would be the lesson that the younger McMahons have kind of learned out of this, that it's not every single thing that affects your company off air has to be used on air. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Unless you're going to go back to the days of the late 90s where everything was an open book.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're trying to get back to kayfabe. And if that's what they want to do, great. But, you know, let's go with the kayfabe. Don't, you know, bring up real life situations. I mean, before Eddie's passing, him and Rey were in the best feud of the year. They hated each other. He tried to steal Dominic from Rey Mysterio.
Uh-huh.
And then you look at the Rumble, and you got Big Show and Rey, and, you know, Big Show saying, you know, congratulations, you want to win this for Rey, you know, Eddie, best of luck. Well, just 2 months ago,
yeah.
You know, he was choke slamming the hell out of Mysterio on the curb, on Eddie's car.
Yep, yep.
So, you know, if you're going to go one way, then go that one way. If you're going to go kayfabe, great. But, I mean, don't interject, you know, the real-life situations and expect people to be able to follow it. I don't think anybody internally had bad intentions.
Yeah.
I think they just had blinders on.
Exactly.
And I think that they were thinking, okay, people want to see this. People want Ray to win. People want to hear about, you know, about Eddie. But it got to the point where they were just, they had the blinders on, just like a racehorse, and they were looking at the finish line, but the finish line just kept getting farther and farther away.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have to take, you know, stop, take a look around, and say, wow, this is what's really going on. Let's work with this and see what we can come up with in the three ways to resolve. So.
Well, I think the main problem WWE has now is the same problem they had 10 years ago, which is, it's an irony, because the problem they had 10 years ago was that they were still booking 10-year-old booking, and that in 96 you had all the cartoon characters and the fake Razor and Diesel and all the things that kind of worked in the 80s, if you could say worked, they were still using. And now the world has changed again. It's been 10 years since the Attitude Generation really broke out, and WWE is still trying to shock people, trying to offend people into watching, and trying to create this cheesy, kind of Jerry Springer-like product. And it was fun when it was, you know, but society has changed. And I think the shows that people watch nowadays, and this is why I always call for better storytelling, people watch 24. They watch Lost. They watch, you know, the women watch Desperate Housewives. I mean, there's the shows on TV right now, they're starting to phase out a lot of the reality shows. And then trying to work on a lot of these dramatic shows where the viewers aren't idiots anymore. You have to really follow a show like 24 or Lost to know what's going on with it. And you don't see the producers of 24 worried that their audience isn't going to get it. You know what I mean? And they're not beating you over the head with things because they think you're too stupid to understand. And WWE is still doing that. And I think that my personal feeling, and I've always felt that way, when the day finally comes that they realize that they shouldn't book necessarily to the lowest common denominator, but maybe somewhere in the middle and give their audience some credit, people will start following their stories and they'll want to get captured into that world. But as of now, there's really no world to get captured into. It's more or less just watching this sleazy, weird kind of cheese fest every Monday night.
And I completely agree 100%. In addition to that, I think the in-ring product also has to change a little bit as well. They were going, you know, the hardcore and the high-fly, the high-risk maneuvers back in the late 90s with the Attitude Era, and now they've completely put on the brakes to the point where, and I say this in my reviews all the time, 30 seconds into a match, you get a headlock, you get an armbar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a middle ground where you're not putting your wrestlers at risk, but where it's actually more entertaining than what you're putting on now. Jeff Jarrett and Christian, or even a couple months ago, Jeff Jarrett and Rhino had a great main event on TNA wrestling a WWE-style match without all the rest holes. And they did slow things down. They just went all out for 12, 13 minutes. And I think that's a huge difference for me in how I'm enjoying the product. I mean, right now, WWE wrestling is so slow. And yes, I understand the reason behind it, but man, oh man, there's got to be some kind of, like you said, middle ground where you can pick up the pace a little bit without putting your wrestlers at risk of getting hurt or injured.
No, but you know what the irony is? And I forgot who we had on. It was either Spike or Rhino. We talked about you could slow down a style. You can get rid of high spots without the matches that they're putting on now. I mean, that's the thing. They say, we want to slow down the style, and slowing down the style doesn't make a match unexciting, and that's what really gets me, because prior to the Attitude Generation, where everybody was jumping off of, you know, freaking buildings every other night, prior to that, the matches weren't all headlocks. You know, I mean, they had good matches before they started doing high spots, so they tell everybody to slow it down, and out of that comes kind of this weird, relaxed style, and I think it's a problem on WWE's part. They look at it more like, well, we're going to cut back on high spots, so we're going to give people a slower match. Well, it doesn't have to be a slower match. It just has to be a less dangerous match, and that's what you need to cut out, not the excitement. You need to cut out the, you know, falling on your head bullshit. You know, you could put on.
That's why I'm enjoying Ring of Honor so much, is to give them a little, you know, bit of air time before I head out here. You know, you got people like Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness and all these mat workers, guys who are in the William Regal mold, but they have an updated spin on the kind of matches that they can have, and that's why I'm such a fan of a lot of the TNA matches and Ring of Honor in particular, because they're able to do that, lifeline. They're not jumping all over the place like chicken jumping beans. They're not throwing themselves on their head too often. I don't want to say never, but they're not doing as often as people used to do. But they're putting in overall, generally, much, much better in-ring product than WWE. And it's not, I mean, it's a completely different style of wrestling, but there certainly is a place for WWE to go to make their in-ring product better, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you, man. And if anything good comes out of it all, you know, hopefully Ring of Honor will give us some big stars that the two companies can use and finally be able to use that style correctly and the way it's supposed to be done. Because they seem to be learning a lot about psychology while they're there, and they're learning a lot about how to get a crowd up without killing yourself in the process.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, Zah, dude, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Guys, go to the site, check it out. Zah covers SmackDown. He does Shaking My Head, his column. It actually should be up if you're listening to this on Friday. It's up today. Covers OVW. Basically, Zah does it all. So, Zah, thanks so much, man, for being on the show, bro.
Appreciate you having me on, especially on a day where Christian's coming on all on his own. It's a good day. Appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem, brother. So there you have it, guys. Zah, you now know what he sounds like, so you have a voice to put with the monkey that says WTF. So be sure to check out a lot of Zah's work on the site. He should have a column up right now if you go there, and you can give it a look. So check that out. Now, you guys know the drill from here on out. You're going to go from part one to part two, and you can hear the special interview with...
Christian!
That's right. Wait, who is that?
Christian!
Perfect. So go to part two, and you'll hear Christian Cage, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I'll see you guys there. Don't get lost.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.